Botswana as we bring you details of all these stories on our show tonight. Our text line is 0266-026-941. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. We are live on all our FM stations across the country. To our very first story, Senior Minister Yao Safumafu says government cannot employ in the public sector except in health and education. He added that some public sector workers may be dismissed if it becomes necessary. At the National Economic Forum, Mr. Safumafu said government is focusing on macroeconomic environment, debt stability, blocking revenue leakages, as well as infrastructural development. He said government faces more challenges now than ever, wondering how government can absorb graduates from 20 public universities and 75 private universities, as well as other tertiary institutions. The senior minister asked the private sector to lead the challenge in job creation and added that the time to domesticate the Ghanaian economy is now. Behind the News explores this issue tonight, and joining us on the line is Deputy Secretary General of the TUC, Joshua Ansah. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening to your listeners.
Was TUC represented at the National Economic Forum?
Yes, please, we are represented.
How did you receive news from the senior minister that government cannot employ in the public sector and that possibly some workers may even be sacked?
Thank you very much. Really, when initially I listened to the senior minister, and I was just wondering, but quickly I also realized that at the tail end of his speech, he said that with the exception of education and health.
Mr. Asa, your voice is low. If you can speak up a bit for us.
Yes, what I'm saying is that the senior minister also added that with the exception of education and health, government will not be able to employ more employees from the graduates who graduate every year from our tertiary institutions.
But what does that mean? Because we live in an economy where we all expect the government to be the employer. And if parents are hearing this from government, is it not kind of moral, demoralizing the people?
Really, me speaking as a leader of the TUC, I think that the government is the major employer, and we expect that it should employ a lot more people into the employment sector. But here we are, the government is saying that due to IMF conditionalities and where we have been to, it is not possible for government to absorb this number of army of graduate that comes out from our tertiary institutions every year. But government will do everything right to create a enabling environment for the private sector to generate employment for our brothers and sisters who come out from school.
Is organized labor in support of that?
No, please. We are totally not in support of government not employing people. We think that government, being the largest employer, should do everything within its powers to employ. It should provide the necessary tools for those living on the job to do the best out of them. But if the government says it can no longer employ, I mean, it's something that is shocking to all of us. But all the same, because it said that they will do everything, they will create an enabling environment for the private sector to create jobs, I think that comes down our next lesson.
The public sector remains a problem. The previous administration had issues with it when they said that some public corporations or institutions will be made to be self-dependent so that government could use the revenue, channel that to other sectors. TUC had issues with that. And from the senior minister, it appears the same thing is going to be done. Government may even dismiss some workers. How about that?
As for the dismissing or declaring some people redundant, we will never allow or accept that decision from the government. Because if workers are on job and give them the necessary tools and apparatus to work with, everybody wants to work to the best of his or her ability. And we think that government should create an enabling environment for those who are on job to do their job as expected of them. And also manage and ensure that those who come out from school every year are also jobs are created for them to manage the economy. If they want to develop the economy and sustain the economy, and without jobs, there's no way they can achieve that objective. Because when people are having certain jobs to do, there's no way you can say you are growing your economy. Because people must be paid for people to spend, and that is where economy grows. If that is not, then there are things that they can never achieve whatever they are saying. But if we say they are going to make the private sector an engine of growth and give them all the necessary support and assistance to create more jobs, then maybe they will be able to go near their objective.
TUC has always been on the side of workers, but the reality on the ground is also that productivity in the public sector is terribly bad. Yet government spends a lot of money there. Wouldn't it be a good idea if government should lay off some workers and then use the money probably to enhance other sectors of the economy, the private sector, for instance, to take over?
My brother, productivity issue in Ghana is just like the chicken and the egg. Which one comes first? You know, most of from January up to now, most of the district assemblies and the rest or DCs have not even gotten their share of the funds. When workers go to work, how do you expect them to work to their fullest? These are some of the ingredients that people need to actually work to their fullest. So I think that the issue about productivity should be a subject that TUC, government and all stakeholders to have a second look at a broader discussion with other stakeholders to see which way all of us can move this country forward.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, sir.
Thank you very much, sir.
Joshua Ansah is Deputy General Secretary of the Trade Union Congress, TUC. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. We also have on the line Solomon Kote. He's the General Secretary of the Industrial and Commercial Workers Union, ICU. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening and thank you so much for the privilege. And by regards to your listener.
Thanks for your time also. Government is indicating that the public sector cannot absorb more people. There's a possibility of even laying off those at post. But the private sector industry should be positioned to shoulder the challenge. How ready is the private sector to handle that?
Thank you. It's really a tall order. It's a tall order because the playing field is not even for all. The private sector is facing some myriad of challenges that is not allowing them to actually get their views on the job creation that we are all yearning for. This comes from the backdrop that, one, to be able to establish one factory, the demand, land acquisition itself is a problem. Proximity to power is a problem. Continuous flow of the power is also an issue. And then availability of the markets of whatever they are going to produce is also a big challenge. So for government to say it is releasing, you know, that aspect into the private sector, a lot more of support must come from government to enable them to stand on their feet. If we look at it clearly, the multinationals who are having the giant factories around us, most of them are doing their marketing outside the country because to every factory, your strength is actually lying on the fact that what you produce, there is a ready market for it. How are they going to be supported? Internally, the market is very slow. If we take the beverage parties in Ghana, almost all of them are struggling to be on their feet. Either one, they are using hard currency to, you know, import raw materials to enable them actually to stabilize. They are facing the interest rate charges to be put to the bank, and so on and so forth. So governments must demonstrate that it is the private sector that must be the development in employment. Then some real support must come to these people. And then I think you'll be able to allow that to come to pass.
When you say real support, exactly what kind of support are you talking of?
Well, we have such a tax regime that could also give relief to the if you are importing raw materials into a factory, probably if everybody is paying 10% on their import duties, you'll be willing to pay less. To give you the relief that they want you to do that appropriate. They need relief from taxes, acquisition of land, as I said, government will be part in negotiating and making sure that they are giving good assets. That must also be too cumbersome for them to actually go through.
But government has already done that. Lots of the taxes have either been reduced or abolished. Is that not enough for industry?
It is not enough at all. You see, if you really look at it, the import duty, okay, and the export duty that we are seeing with this on them, they are simply, that's not enough. It is reasonably, you know, given. But is that enough to let the factory or the investor get returns of his money? We will say no. No, because the utility is still a problem. They are still telling us that the electricity bill is too much, the water bill is too much, the forest is too much, etc., etc. So there's too much for the factories to gamble with at this stage. So if government really wants to be the relief should be in real terms that they can take, not only on one side, but the other side.
Mr. Akotai, where we have found ourselves now, Crossroad graduates from 20 public universities, 75 private universities. There are other tertiary schools, vocational schools as well. Government cannot practically do anything about that. How ready is...
There's supposed to be a relationship between academia and industry. Until that relationship is actually established, people will come out from industries without the waiting jobs that they wish they are going to have.
What kind of relationship is that?
Well, the industry should be able to determine which class of workers we are interested in so that the training will be skewed to those areas. And on that, the universities will be interested to teach what they know they should teach best. But should they come out, is industry interested in those class of workers that have been trained? If industry is not interested in them, then we have excess of that class of workers working there and they claim there are no jobs. And if they are also being trained, are they adding in the federal skill also to it? That when they come out, they will also have the opportunity to create some job for others to come. This is the challenge that we have now. We don't think the data is there to let industry see that this is the type of work students are they want to absorb, so that the university will be skewing towards training those people and make them available for faculty. This is what
Mr. Akuta, the counter argument has always been that, look, the over 90 universities, private and public. The truth is that even if they had trained these students to meet the needs of industry, the vacancies are simply not there. How about that?
Well, this is where the encouragement is coming, that let's open more industry. And opening more industry, it is not only to absorb students who are coming out, but the resources for the industry to be on this bit should also be available to allow the industry to survive. It's a true way affair in this particular matter. What type of industry are we interested in? Will also afford academia to provide those class of workers. And whether or not the type of industry that is being established will also get the raw materials and the end product we are also willing to buy in this country. It is end to end. If that didn't happen, then whoever invests in that industry will not get returns on its money. Everything, see, the key players, the investors, are interested in getting returns for their money. And that must also be assured or be worked for properly by those who are the key players in that particular industry.
In the meantime, what do we do? As we speak, over 70,000 graduates were released onto the job market last week by the National Service Secretariat after completion of their service. Already we have people there looking for jobs. What do we do in the meantime?
Well, in the meantime, we all have to realize that once upon a time, we're having only three or four universities in this country, where each of them has their specialty and strength in one particular course for the other. Now, with the privatization of it, is that we are seeing a lot more with accreditation from either well-known universities outside or within, has given room for more universities, you know, to spring up. And by so doing, more admissions are taking place. And we are releasing more students, like you have said, about these 70,000. If we don't control the upset of the opening of the private universities, then at the end of the day, parents realize that they have their fees, the students come up, and there's nothing for them to do. And that will not help our system. So we will say, first and foremost, control and care should come on the spread of private universities that we are seeing around, including government universities. Then secondly, if we have realized that without industry, we will not be able to develop this country, what is there more to be done to support, you know, the existing industry for them to expand? Not too long ago, when we had the economic structural adjustment in this country, we noticed most of the institutions that used to exist were all privatized. When they were privatized, they died natural death. So we lost employment opportunities that were with those companies. Okay? So the system itself created this unemployment, you know, talent. If we want to go back to basics and restore them, then the foundation should be that if we are going to industry, how do we see them? Because for the graduates, they will come at every academic year and we'll get the challenge continued.
All right. We want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, sir. Solomon Kota is the General Secretary of the Industrial and Commercial Workers Union. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. The senior minister, Yawsa Fumafu, said the time has come for the economy to be domesticated. Referring to the late Danlati, the senior minister said domestication is the way to go. So what is this domestication all about, and what impact or difference will it make when fully adopted? We have on the line Dr. Henry Herbert Latte. He is the leader of the GCPP, the party that has domestication as its major philosophy. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, Senior Prophet.
Doc, what is domestication all about?
Well, to keep it very simple, like the late Dan Latte said, he explained domestication as eat what you grow and grow what you eat. Eat what you grow is produce. One, in agriculture, produce whatever you're good at producing. And then create a market for it and then consume it. And if we help most farmers produce what they're good at and we give them the right stimulus and they grow it and then we consume it, we'll be able to be consuming our own stuff. It could be rice, it could be maize, it could be chili, it could be other things that we can produce here. It's not important from other people. So domestication is producing things for yourself locally, local production from our local farmers. So once we produce, it doesn't only have to be agricultural produce. It could be anything that can be produced by Ghanaians. If we produce and we consume it, if we produce and we consume it, it means we're keeping employment here. If we don't do that and keep buying from outside, then our money will be going and creating jobs as well. So if we produce it and we create jobs here, and then we add value to it, then most of the graduates you're talking about will get jobs. They have skills in agriculture. They have skills in accounting. They have skills in marketing. They have skills in ICT. And the whole world is getting so big. And, well, we use the word global village now, that they can source more orders from outside and export, and actually export, and the business gets bigger, most people will start getting more jobs.
But
if I help ourselves, and for example, this government is saying what? Just one factory. So if we produce most graduates, and there's factories in every district, I think most of the students will come out and get a job.
Doc, the impression I'm getting is that the success of domestication will be conditional, subject to tastes and preferences. The senior minister indicated that, look, when you go to Kenya, people have trust in medicine manufactured in Ghana. And so they believe that there's that credibility. That is one factor. But the taste is also there. What if I want to consume something from somewhere, not from Ghana?
Well, if you watch most countries, governments that have been successful, and most countries that have been successful, I'll go back to when I was a child. We never used to respect things from China and from Japan, but they never gave up. At the beginning, it might not be as tasty or as wonderful as you want it, but if you keep on practicing, we laugh at the Chinese, and now they're one of the best producers in the world. So if our things are not as good as they should be now, that doesn't mean we forget it. We should continue consuming it, and over a period of time, practice to express it. It could get better. And as it gets better, then we'll be able to export more and generate employment. We have to help Ghanaian businesses. That is why I'm very interested in the passing for food and jobs. It's very, very important. I supported President Mahama because they started putting things in, started calling local content. Local content means domestication. If we do not help ourselves, nobody else will do it for us. So if this government NPP says, passing for food and jobs, it does the two. You front and you grow what you eat. Yeah? And then what you eat will create jobs for your own people and you earn revenue in your back. But then you can build more infrastructure. You can build more schools, you can build more hospitals, you can build more roads to be able to make it easier for the farmers to have access to their market for economic emancipation. It's very, very important. Without domestication, without helping ourselves, without helping our farmers to produce and export, we will not get anywhere. Otherwise, we keep importing, and as you import, then you will not have the jobs. We have the problem that we are having now. More graduates coming out with no jobs. So domestication is creating an environment for our own economy to take off, to help our farmers be successful, to help our business people to build more successful business, create jobs.
Well,
what is all about?
On the lighter note, now that the major parties are taking the idea of domestication, does that bring to the end the career of the GCPP?
Of course not. Of course not. It's very, very good. If we are given the chance, we will do it better. Since they're doing it, I'm very happy. I'm really happy that the senior minister, Honorable Osafu Mahfu, has put the nail on the head. This is how we have to improve our economy. If we do not domesticate, if we don't help our own farmers to be successful, if we don't have our businessmen to be helpful, if we don't create the right environment for business to take off, where are we going? We won't go anywhere.
I think that will solve the unemployment problem in Ghana.
It will solve the unemployment problem, especially with agriculture. 70% in agriculture. And as we take off, then those who are graduated as well will come and join it because of the adding of the value. By adding value, you're going to create all subsidized jobs in manufacturing so that they'll be able to sell, they'll be able to have accountants, to be able to have all the necessary networks of ICT and all these sort of things. That creates more jobs for the whole system to take off. Once that takes off, most people will be happy. Then industry will be able to talk to the universities to give them the graduates that they need without being able to help agriculture and help industry to take off. We'll be producing the wrong people. We'll produce them, there'll be no jobs for.
All right. Doc, I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, sir.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Dr. Henry Herbert Latte is the leader of the Great Consolidated Popular Party, GCPP, the party that talks more of domestication. We also have on the line David Duchi Kofiga. He's a leader of Graduates with Disabilities. Good evening and welcome to Unemployed Graduates with Disability. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you for having me.
You and your group, together with others, have always been on government to employ you. Now, the indications are that, apart from health and education, government cannot employ. You have to look elsewhere, particularly the private sector. How do you receive this news?
We hope that government will reconsider its decision in relation to persons with disability. the situation will be dire. There will be dire consequences for PWDs who are graduates. We started this, George, from about 2015, and now we have Center for Equal Access, which we are leading to champion this thing. We have about 100 PWDs who have completed UCC, Winneba, Legon, who are in the house from maybe from 2003, some of them 2010. They've applied to Ministry of Education, severally they are not getting jobs. So if this policy is fully implemented, I know that the government is a listening government, and they will consider PWDs, graduate PWDs, in their policy formulation. We are hoping that they put some policy in place, like an affirmative action policy, where they will automatically consume PWDs who complete the various social institutions into the public sector and the private sector. We are not saying government should employ all PWDs, but some of them are having a qualification that can work in the private sector. But the government being our father is not listening. If the government being our father does not set the pace, I don't think others will follow. We've written letters, George, to the chief of education, gender, and a whole lot. Of 3 months ago, we've not yet received any reply yet, but we know the government is now settling, so we'll continue knocking on to see how best it could help our brothers and sisters who have completed school, sitting in the house doing nothing, and still being burdened on their parents.
Well, I'm aware that government is working in that direction. For instance, when you go to the toll booths and others, government has engaged PWDs to handle that work. So there's some work being done.
George, if you listen to me very carefully, I'm saying graduate. Are you the first somebody who has his master's degree to go and sit in a toll booth? No. Those ones are for those who are not able to go to school. We have people who have their masters sitting in the house. We have people who have their degrees sitting in the house. So we want to, we've prepared the Center for Equal Access, have prepared a policy to be presented to government. If that is a working document that government, if government accepts it, to help reduce the thousands of people. In the whole year, PWDs who completed, who complete schools are not even up to 100. So what are we talking about here? If Benin has been able to do it, I believe Ghana has a resources center to do it. If all of that is registered, who are they? Heading on their still looking for handouts to just survive.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. David Dochi Kofigan is leader of graduates with...
Thank you for having me.
Right, thank you very much. Unemployed graduate with disability. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana.
Behind the News, your incisive news analysis program, where you get the last word on all the day's topical stories. Join us every Monday to Friday between the hours of 8 and 9 p.m. as we bring you in-depth analysis of issues making the headlines. Behind the News is also live across the country on Garden City Radio 92.1 in Kumasi, Radio Savannah 91.3 Tamale, Ura Radio 89.7 Bogatanga, GBC Kachi FM 95.5 Kete Kachi, Unique FM 95.7 in Accra, Unique FM 95.1 Osei Kojokrom, and remember, we are on GBC's Unique FM 95.7, which is online via TuneIn Radio.
President Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo has begun a 6-day working visit to the western and central regions, beginning from the western region, where the president was a guest of honor at a Durba organized by the chiefs and people of Bibieni. The president, for the first time since the lynching of Major Maxwell Mahama, has visited Dentura Boase in the central region as part of his tour. I've been joined on the line by Deputy Chief of Staff. We have on the line Director of Communications at the Presidency, Eugene Ahe. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my brother. How are you doing?
Very well, and thanks for your time. Where is the team currently?
Let me say a good evening to your listeners. The president currently is at Kwasa Ekopong. As I speak with you, he's having a meeting with the chiefs of Kwasa Ekopong. So as I speak with you, this is the very last leg of our Thursday tour of the Western Union.
So what was the rationale behind the weekend visit?
The president has made it clear that every month, as much as possible, once he's in the country, he will make it a point to touch base with the people on the ground. So far, we have visited three regions. We've done the Ashanti region, we've done the Eastern region, and we've done the Volta region. So this tour of the Western region and the Central region will be, I think, the fifth out of the 10 regions so far. At least he wants to make sure that you're not isolated completely from the happenings on the ground. There's a tendency that once you find yourself at the seat of government, if you don't constantly touch base with the people to get at first hand their concerns and address them, you might be alienated from the happenings in the real world, and this certainly, once come election day or come the D-Day, definitely you're going to pay the price for it. So we just want to make sure that as much as possible, the president gets a first-hand information of what's happening on the ground and not necessarily rely on third-party information. So he's today, for example, he's been to Bibiani, he's been to Sefibia, so he's been to the Nchirabwase, and to them, and currently he's at Kwasa Ekopong, which is the very last stop for day one.
Eugene, you were with the president during the campaign tours. Now it is not a campaign tour, but the same person on the ground. How will you describe the reception comparing the campaign days to now?
Oh, the reception has been awesome. In all honesty, traditionally people don't associate the MPP with being strong in this part of the Western region, especially in the northern part of the Western region. I think if you look at the results from the last election, the 2012 election, for example, we only held one out of the 80 in the northern part of the Western region. So traditionally, you can say we've never been strong. But fast forward to the 2016 election, we ended up winning about 4 out of the 80 in the northern part of the Western region. So I can say that the reception we received in those times, if you compare to now, I'd say now it's even much more greater than what we saw during the campaign era. Comparatively, it's far greater from what I have seen today as compared to what we saw in the run-up to the 2016 election.
Interestingly, the president has visited the Nchirabwase. How was the atmosphere?
Well, the atmosphere continues to be a solemn one. We all heard on the radio, we all saw it on our screen as to the mood of the town in the aftermath of the murder of Major Maxwell Mahama. The mood has not changed. Well, from what I've seen, you can see there's still solemnity all around the place. People are still not so sure about the reaction of Ghanaians towards them. The people at Nchirabwase, I mean, are still not so sure about the reaction of Ghanaians towards them. So I believe it will take some time, but it's still a very, very calm place, extremely calm place, even to the extent that today the Omahine of Nchirabwase made it clear that the town is no longer called Nchirabwase, but rather New Obwase. At least they want to try as much as possible to get the stigma away from them and ensure that normalcy returns to the town. So there's still a town quite in some state of solemnity, if I can put it that way. It's still very, very calm. People going about their businesses, but you can see something clearly has been taken away from that town.
If my memory serves me right, the Western region was where the president did mention, that's when he was a candidate, creation of new regions. Today he's there. Has he touched on that?
Oh yes, he's touched on that. He told the, especially at, well, in all the stops he's made so far, he's pointed out what was currently happening. He made it clear that on the 29th of June, he wrote a letter to the Council of State, presenting to them the petitions he's received from certain parts of the country or certain persons in certain parts of the country who are demanding for a new region. Now, by the constitution, he has to forward those petitions to the Council of State. He's done that, and the Council of State have met on the petitions that have been forwarded to them. And I know on the 15th of August, the President is scheduled to hold a meeting with the Council of State where they would give him their advice with regards to whether or not the decision to create new regions is apt or not. So once that takes place, once they've given him their advice, and if it's a favorable advice, then the President has to set up a commission of inquiry to ensure that the petition is considered, and then from there, if it means a referendum has to be to be held, it will be held. So he's told them of the processes that have to be followed in order to ensure that the region is created. He's still committed to ensuring that the region is created. That one, there's no doubting that.
Right.
Still very much committed to that.
So where next?
So God willing, tomorrow we head to the Takwa areas, Takwa and then Amenfi East constituencies. These are the two constituencies where we'll be based in tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, God willing, we round up our visit with tours of Isikado Ketan, and then Sekendi, and then Takrade.
All right.
So in all, at least we should have visited 9 constituencies by the end of the third day of the tour of the Western region.
Aye. Eugene, thanks for your time on Behind the News tonight.
Thank you very much.
Eugene Ahin is Director of Communications at the Presidency. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. Moving on to other stories. One alleged illegal miner was killed. More than 880 arrested and 25 mining equipment seized in just a week after Operation Vanguard began. Kwame Najimai was shot dead in an exchange of fire with members of the task force at Wawase, a suburb of Obuasi in the Ashanti region. The anti-Galamsey task force was deployed to the Ashanti eastern and western regions after the government had banned illegal mining and placed a 6-month moratorium on all small-scale mining at a time that most water bodies and environment had been badly polluted. Tonight, we look at the work of the 400 combined police and military anti-Galamsey task force and the latest killing of an alleged illegal miner. We have on the line the public relations officer of the Obuasi branch of the Ghana National Association of Small Scale Miners, Benjamin Anan. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my brother.
We understand somebody has been killed. How is your association handling that issue?
Yeah, the position of the Small Scale Mining Association nationwide is that we are not comfortable the way the military is handling this process, because the Small Scale Mining nationwide are having their task force. Well, every district we visited, the district security council gave us a police officer to lead the task force. For instance, when you go to Dunkwa and its environment, we have destroyed a lot of galamseys on the river bodies to which the government is aware. The government is also giving us a training at Takwa University of Mines. And we even find it difficult to understand why students now, because we knew that there are some, even to the sense that small scale mining, some of them watch their tailings in rivers. So we and as well as the Galamsey. So we condemned the measures of using the military to get rid of them. Because the purpose of this vanguard is to see to it that we get rid of them, but not to fight them. And I remember that during the inauguration of this anti-Galamse vanguard, Professor Frumpo Mboateng said that even those people they decided to resist arrest, we should use maximum force. So what we are wondering is that, is this the minimum force the professor said, or what?
But the defense minister told them that they should go and work professionally, but you shouldn't dare them.
Yeah, they are there as professionals. But the instruction was that we should use minimum force. I heard it. This guy they are talking about, I am in Obuasi, and the place specifically is called Enyimedukrom, suburb of Wawasi. And these guys were not in a site. They are working a river Angogo Asante have already destroyed. So it is not a matter of site. And I must say that we don't even have Galamse in Obuasi, because when Angogo Asante decided to relinquish 50% of their concession to government, even to people in Obuasi, all of us, those they are interested in working in that sector, they are all in those 50%. So for now, we don't have even Galamseyes in Obuasi. So if they are saying that Galamseyes crash the military in Obuasi, I'm finding it difficult to believe that.
You asking the task force to apologize over the killing of Kwamina Ajimai?
Why do they have to apologize? Why they are saying that they were engaged in a war? So if you are in a battlefield and I kill you, why do you have to apologize? They must do that when they have accepted that, yes, this incident has happened and we saw it. That one, yes, but we are claiming it was a war. So in a war, we don't apologize.
What's the mood of the people in Enyimedukrom, Wawasi, and surrounding communities?
Traumatized. The whole community is traumatized. The whole community is traumatized. Because, you know, in democracy, it is purely decentralization. That's why if the small scale miners use the district security councils in their operation. In the revolutionary era, people were brutalized in this community. So we are not comfortable even meeting a soldier and to confront them. So I'm finding it difficult to believe that there was confrontation between the human boys and the soldiers.
So what do you suggest be done now?
But I'm finding it difficult to believe that.
What do you suggest?
We are afraid of soldiers.
What do you suggest should be done?
What I'm suggesting is that the government should withdraw the military, then he support the police with the small-scale mining task force, and we will get rid of them. We don't need to.
Thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Benjamin Annan is the Obuasi branch PRO of the Ghana National Association of Small-Scale Miners. We also have on the line the convener of the Media Coalition Against Illegal Mining and also the Managing Director of Graphic Communications Group Limited, Kenneth Ashigbe. Good evening, sir, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening. How are you?
Very well, sir, and thanks for your time. What would be your assessment of Operation Vanguard so far?
Well, from the reports we are getting, there's been some arrests, you know, there's been some seizures of equipment and all of that. But then we also have been confronted with this one death that has happened, and that death did not just happen. You know, there were altercations between the military and police task force and, you know, this community that has led to this unfortunate death. And it is, in as much as it is regrettable, we need to also look at the fact that before all of this was done, you know, everybody had said it. You know, we had said the fact that, you know, the ministry itself has talked about the fact that there was a moratorium. Everybody was supposed to, all those engaged in small-scale mining were supposed to have stopped work. So when I heard the PRO talking about the fact that there is no Galamsey happening in Obuasi, if anybody is engaged in small-scale mining at this stage, it's an illegality. And it's not the tag that you put on it that matters. It's whether what the process that you're engaged in, whether it is legal or not. And our appeal to everybody is the fact that we want this illegality to stop. We want to sanitize the processes. Some small-scale miners themselves we speak are undergoing training because our faces that we're going to get into where would ensure that we can have some sustainable mining. But it cannot be right when people who are engaged in what he calls is not galamsey, but is mining when the state has said they should stop engaging the military task force in stone throwing. It cannot happen, you know. And, you know, so definitely it's, in as much as the death is regrettable, we need to also caution our people that this has to stop. And I hear you saying that we should just let the police. We have been in this country for how many years allowing the district security councils to work? What has been the result? You know?
Well, we have been told by security experts that there's no perfect security anywhere. There's maximum security. And even with that, cooperation is very important. From what we're hearing, it appears that there's no cooperation. The relationship between the people and the task force isn't that good.
No, I think if we just isolate one incident and use that as the basis for drawing conclusions, then we'll stand a risk of engaging in a fallacy of hasty conclusion. It would be important to find out what is happening. And one of the calls I have made, and we are going to be meeting the ministry, is that we need to embed journalists within the task force so that we can have the reportage, you know, first-hand reportage of what is happening, you know. But we cannot use just one incident to then say that there's no cooperation. There's information that we have also that is saying that in a lot of the communities that, you know, the task force is working in, there has been some cooperation. So for us as media, what we need to do is independently verify what is going on. And we definitely would need a cooperation between, the task force and also the small-scale miners. But bear in mind, that before we even started it, we had some of these small-scale organizations coming and daring the task force. You know, so definitely when you have all of this, we should know that, you know, some of these issues are supposed to happen. And we would urge the military that as much as possible, you know, they should use the association of the small-scale miners. And some of you remember that when this Ashanti group came out, there was somebody also from the small-scale miners who came to be debunk what had been said. So we urge the military police task force to work with, you know, the recognized, you know, the small-scale miners, the communities and all of that, so that we can be sure that, you know, we can get some engagement going on. But we definitely need to know that because of the amount of money that are involved, there are people who are going to be able to dare the status quo. And, in all those situations, yes, some minimum amount of force have to be used to be able to ensure that those who have been recalcitrant and were engaged in the exchange of gunfire with, you know, the military, would engage in stone throwing and all of that, the required minimum level of force would have to be applied. We pray that we don't see a lot more of this unfortunate death. But it would require all of us to work together to ensure that we can secure ourselves as a country.
All right. We want to thank you very much for your time on our show, and thanks for the good work on the ground.
Thank you very much.
Kenneth Ashigbe is the Managing Director of Graphic Communications Group Limited and is the convener, Media Coalition Against Illegal Mining. Moving on to other stories. Payment of fees in public universities for the 2017-2018 academic year by students may have to hang in the balance. The Member of Parliament for Boko Central and Chairman of the Subsidiary Legislation Committee in Parliament has threatened to head to court if public universities fail to seek parliamentary approval of their fees. This also comes on the heels of strong opposition from the University Student Association for students in public tertiary institutions, urging them not to pay high fees charged by the institutions for this academic year. Meanwhile, this evening, the National Council for Tertiary Education has issued a statement directing all public universities to charge the fees they did last year and hold on with the new charges pending parliamentary approval. So what does this mean? On the line is the Public Relations Officer of the University of Ghana, a Student Representative Council, Eliezer Fojo-Quason. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, sir. Many thanks for having me.
Thanks for your time. Have you heard of the latest on this development from the National Council for Tertiary Education?
Yes, definitely. I received a call from my Council President at about 6 p.m. today on the development from NCT, and he assured me that he has also forwarded the same notice to the management of the university. So we are waiting for them to respond to it as to whether they are upholding the decision, and or if otherwise, I would know what, as an SRC, we would advise students to do.
Granted, the OB, that does that, or will that settle the brouhaha?
It would be first step in addressing the whole issue, because at the end of the day, we know that still for the 2017-20 academic year, there would be some increases. The next step would be to check what those increases would be to be sure they are not exploitative. They will not cause the same brouhaha that we are experiencing now. So we'll know there will be increases, but it's just that we are calling for it to be marginal and reasonable.
How different is the increases that you're talking about compared to the past?
Okay, so the university has a policy of increasing fees plus or minus 2 of inflation rate. So the projected inflation that comes in the annual budget, and the university would either add 2 or -2 of that amount in determining the year's fee. So for this year, we had the projected inflation rate as 11.2%. And then the university added +2 to it. That makes 13.2%. And that's what it charged across board on all components of the fee. But then we would realize that if you take a very critical look at the situation on the ground, inflation keeps coming down over the month. So we would have expected that if the investor wants to do an adjustment to fees, it's either -2 of the projected inflation, since that is in line with the university policy. Since, of course, they would still have to do a +/-2, and since we are looking at a disinflation, it would be a consequence -2 of the projected inflation rate. But then if we now realize that even in the absence of council, as an university council, the university is going ahead to charge a +2 of the inflation when we are seeing steady decline in inflation rate, that raises a lot of concern. That's what has caused all of these agitations to arise.
But you say +2, -2. You agree with me that what the universities have done, they've not broken that policy.
What the university has done, if you do a very critical face value of the whole issue, you realize that they have not breached the policy. But then again, the university also looks at components in determining the fees. Now, when we begin to look, make an assessment of the individual components on the fee, you realize that there are so many illegalities and so many illegal charges that come together to bloat the fee.
Illegal, right? Charges such as what?
There are so many of them. I can mention the registration fees. The university charges for registration. It charges students in mathematics to pay for practicals, so they don't do practicals. It charges so many other issues I can't mention it because I don't even have the documents with me here in the room. But then these are some of this. The SRC served a petition to the university management because we wanted to exhaust internal mechanisms before would come out and make all of these issues public. We believe that the management would still give a listening ear to the issues, but it appears they've still not given to some of the issues we proposed. As part of the things we proposed was a return to last year's fee. All right. So all of these things were served in the petition. In the petition, we addressed the components that we believed were unreasonable and were illogical.
But the students have left out what favors you, and you're only complaining about what appears not to be fair. There are other components that have not been touched at all. So there are students who are supposed to pay the exact amount that they paid last academic year.
And I'm saying that for such students, there are some components still which runs through or across board, right? I can tell you for a fact that we don't know what constitutes residential facility user fee, but we pay every year for it, and it keeps increasing on by inflation.
Is the SRC represented in the body that determines the fee?
Yeah, the SRC is represented at the Finance and General Purpose Committee meeting, but that is just a person who goes there and has just a vote and cannot influence the decision as an individual. Right? So we don't count the fact that he's representing over 29,000 students or 39,000 students. He's just one person there who has a single vote, who can influence a single decision. So what really would he be able to do? It's only after he comes down to everybody that we begin to now raise some of these social pressures that would cause the right things to be done.
All
right. You're talking about he being at the FGPC meeting. He has only one vote.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for your time on Behind the News tonight. Very grateful for your time. Eliezer Fojo Kwesen is the PRO of the University of Ghana SRC. Some of your text messages. Monica comes in Navrongo says, good evening, George. In fact, this is a warning to the legal miners to stop their illegal activities before more lives are lost, as the military will surely return fire if they are attacked. Any government in power will not focus on creating jobs and employment, but rather base its attention on corruption. Government comes corruption, government goes corruption. What a Ghana. Mr. Atankana in Boko sent in this one. Abdullah in Santani, Tolon District says, I think the illegal Galamseyers must comport themselves well before the anti-Galamsey tax force. Senior minister should resent his decision. May Allah grant President Nanado to deliver. Latuo Ben in Wasa says, in fact, the senior minister should come out clear on the unemployment situation in the country, and the government should bear in mind that unemployed youth voted them into power. The senior minister is on point, but we hope and believe that GES and Ghana Health Service will employ teachers and nurses very fast, because they sat in the house for 4 years in the John Mahama government. Jake Ernest Aye in Kaliu sent in that one. Razak Bulung Kumbungu says, NPP SMS group organizer says, a lot of people are losing their lives because of Galamsey. Galamsey must stop. The Galamseyers should comply with the directives and spare us with our resources. Bernab Gulieme in Uwa sent in a good evening. Government will make it, inshallah. Long live Nanado, long live Ghana. Zibu when she sent in that. Will the universities refund part of the admission fees already paid by some new entrant? Taro Azingo in Kwanta North Volta region is asking. Arongo in Bolga says, no excuse, please. That is why Ghanaians voted them to power. Fuseni inside Kulpong, Upper West. Congrats to IGP, Security and Defense Ministers, for plans enumerated to arrest the armed robbery situation. Honorable Adongo is far. Okay. AU Farouk Tamale says, what a hardship government. Ghanaians voted for senior means to disclose that government can't employ people. Let's wait for 2020. And thank God, George, God, people in Ghana see what Nanado and his vice president will do by the end of the year. Ndoguri Abraham in Bena Yili Northern Region. Lamb taking Rashid in Wenji says, Nanado indeed is a man of vision. Mashud in Tamil says, God, I'm appealing to the